In this week's Parsha, coming up in Parshat. Yeah? Okay. It sounded like it scared a lot of people. We're going to say farewell to Yosef. After 13 prakim, 4 weeks of Parshiot, and to those incredible students who are taking Sefer Bereishit with me since the end of August, we've been reading about Yosef and what happens to be the longest story in Sefer Bereishit. We tend to give names or epithets or appellations to our favorite characters in Tanakh. We've got a lot of Avinus, Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and the corresponding Imahot, Sarah, Imenu, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. We've got a lot of Hamelech, Shaul, David, Shlomo. We've got quite a few Nevi'im, Shmuel Hanavi, Natan Hanavi, Eliyahu Hanavi. But there's only one person in Tanakh who's referred to as a tzaddik, and that is Yosef. And before you start telling me what about Noach, we'll get to Noach in a few minutes, bear with me. And yes, the only one who also has his name of his own is Moshe Rabbeinu. That would be an entirely different shiur. So work with me right now as we seek to delve, what does it mean to be called a tzaddik? First of all, where on earth do we learn that Yosef is a tzaddik? It's not mentioned anywhere in the Pshat. So how does he get this name? What does it mean to be a tzaddik? And then what I like to call the azma, the so what. What does it mean to me as I read about Yosef to know he is a tzaddik? How should I integrate and apply that into my life? So I'd like to start with the Zohar. My apologies, when I sent in the sheet, I actually reworked the order in which I'm presenting the different sources, so I will let you know which one we're going to. We will be hopping around. We're starting with number 11. And this is a quote from the Zohar. Yosef HaTzadik Hu Amud HaOlam, referring to Yosef as a tzaddik and calling him an amud, a pillar, on which the... That's number 10. Oh, no. Okay, because I just... Yeah, thank you. So how does the Zohar get the idea that he is a tzaddik? And what does it then mean that he's an amud HaOlam? As we find out where Yosef gets this term, we're also going to, de facto, translate what it means to be a tzaddik. But before we get started, we're going to try a little bit of audience participation. If I ask you to define a tzaddik, how would you define it? I'm going to ask you for right now just to write down on whatever sheet you have available, tzaddik, word association, this is what it means to you. How would you define tzaddik? So just write it down. I don't want the answers yet, and then we'll come back and do it in a second. If it helps you to have a person in mind that you view as a tzaddik, other than Yosef, please, you can write that down as well. The first time we get the idea that Yosef is called a tzaddik is from an oblique reference in Sefer Amos, Perek Bet, Pasuk Vav. I didn't give you the pasuk, but it's referred to in Source 9. Is that going to be 8 for you, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer? Okay, so it's in Source 8. And the pasuk in Amos reads as follows. Ko amar Hashem al shlosha pishei Yisrael ve'al arba'a lo ashivenu. Says Hashem, for 3 sins of Israel, I will turn away the punishment. It's just going to confuse me more to do it, thanks. But for the 4th, I will not turn away its punishment. Al michram bakesef tzaddik, ve'evyon ba'avur na'alaim. They sold the righteous one for silver, and the poor man for a pair of shoes. Now, the idea of selling a poor man seems to refer to Yosef. And that is where he gets the appellation tzaddik. The new piece of information in this pasuk, in addition to the fact that he's referred to as a tzaddik, is the fact that he was sold for a pair of shoes. Where does this idea develop from? Where else do we see it? What we're seeing in Amos is a case of what we call Hamikra Mefareshet Atzma, that later books in Tanakh are going to actually almost serve as the basis of Midrashim for earlier psukim and earlier ideas. So we see this idea in Amos, and we're going to see it picked up in other Midrashim as well. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, attributed to Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkonus, a second generation Tana, And then the Midrash Tanhuma, again, one of the earlier Midrashim, said to be before Bereshit Rabbah, early Tannaitic period. So what do we see? I'm actually going to read from the Midrash Tanhuma, which should then be source 9. And this is quoting what the brother said. Amru, l'chu v'nim kareinu l'Ishmaelim. Let's go and sell him, the brothers are saying to one another. Let's go and sell him to the Ishmaelites. Hen molichin oto l'kfatzot hamidbar. They're going to take him to the far edges of the desert, and we're not going to have to deal with him anymore. Amdu, mecharuhu. The rest of the brothers decided it was a good idea. And they go and they sell him. Be'esrim kesef, for 20 pieces of silver. L'kol echad mehem shnei kesef. Using higher mathematics, each one got 2 pieces of silver, liknot mina alaim liraglehem. And from this, they bought shoes for them to wear their feet, or in some cases, for their families. The idea of the brothers buying shoes from the sale of Yosef, after we see it in the Midrashim, it's picked up in apocryphal books called the Testaments of the Brothers. Each one of the 12 Shvatim has a different Sava'a, or things that they said right before they did, which has then gone on to become part of the Christian canon. But we see it back in our liturgy, in our books, with a piyut ela ezkera, which is recited either Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av, depending on if you're Ashkenazi or Sfard. I don't think I realized it was Sfardim read it on Tisha B'Av, or that Ashkenazim, there are 2 opinions whether you do it Musaf or Mincha, depending on which part of Europe you're coming from. What is the source in ela ezkera? So I'm just going to read the section that talks about it. Hem ke'anulo omed tekenavahu. So now we're talking about the king talking to the rabbis of the time. He's proposing what's going to happen now to pay back, to atone for the punishment of these brothers who sold Yosef. No. Okay. Omed tekenavahu nam aye avotechem asher achichem mecharuhu. Where are your fathers who sold their brother? L'orchat Yishmaelim secharuhu. They peddled him to a caravan of Yishmaelim. U'be'ad na'alayim netanuhu. And they gave him over in order to acquire shoes. So again, we now have, from this basis of Amos, Yosef is considered a tzaddik, and coincidentally, he was sold for shoes. But we still don't know what it means to be a tzaddik. So for that, we're going to look at, actually, the first sources on your page with a person who is described as a tzaddik, and that would be Noach. Twice, Noach is referred to as a tzaddik. Once, if you would, by the narrator, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the third person, just sort of describing what is going on. And the second time where Hashem actually directly calls Noach a righteous person. So first I'm reading source 1, Perek Vav, Pasuk Tet. Ela toldot Noach. Noach, ish tzadik, tamim haya bedor tav, et Elokim hitalach Noach. These are either the generations or the children or the stories of Noach. Noach was a righteous man in his generation. He walked with God. And what does Hashem say about Noach in source 2? Vayomer Hashem lo Noach. Bo ata v'chol beitcha el hateva, you and your whole house should come to the ark. Kiotcha ra'iti tzadik lefanai bador hazeh, because I have seen you, I understand, I realize, I appreciate that you are tzadik in front of me in this generation. So we have that Noah has called a tzadik. What does it mean to be a tzadik? In source number 4, the Midrash Tanhuma, again one of these earlier Midrashim, looking at the idea of what a tzaddik is, Davar Acher, Ela Toldot Noach, Noach Ish Tzaddik, Lama Nikra Shemot Tzaddik, why was he called a tzaddik? Ho'il V'zane Briotav Shel Kodesh Baruch Hu Na'aseh Kebor'o. Because what did he do? He fed the creations of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, following in Hashem's footsteps, if you would. And because he sustained them, as Hashem sustains us, he is given the term tzaddik. Kinyan shenemar ki tzaddik Hashem tzvakot ahav, that Hashem loves a tzaddik. Also, continues the Midrash, which is going to help us a lot today, v'chen Yosef, ho'il v'zana tabriyot sheva shanim nikrat tzaddik. Yosef also was known for sustaining the people. He also is known as a tzaddik. Shinemar, and quoting our pasuk in Amos, Al Michram Bekesef Tzadik, the brothers who sold the Tzadik for money. For also sustaining, in that time it was just about all of mankind, for the 7 years of the famine, he is known as a Tzadik. So according to this first interpretation, a tzaddik is one who cares for and provides food for God's creation. Noah did this in his time. Yosef did it in his time. But is that it? Wait, there's more. Rashi, source 8 for you? Source 7. Ela toldot Noah, Noah ish tzaddik. That once Noah is going to be mentioned, we have to give praise, that when you make reference to a tzaddik, you should give a bracha. That what are the toldot of a tzaddik? Their good deeds. So here we have the idea that what is a tzaddik all about? Good deeds, not necessarily limited to giving sustenance into food, but in general doing what is right, enabling mankind to continue. And then we have the famous discussion whether he would have been a tzaddik in any generation or only in his generation, but we'll stop there for now. We won't continue with Rashi. Noah is a tzaddik. So one side question we can ask, if Noah is such a tzaddik, how come we don't refer to him as Noah HaTzaddik? And for that, I'm going to refer you to source 3, the pasuk in Yechezkel, which also is going to mention Noah as a tzaddik, along with two people we might not have usually considered for that appellation, Daniel and Iov. And as they're calling them tzaddik, it's really damning with faint praise. If I had three people in this thing that I was going to save, Hashem is telling Yechezkel, if Noah, Daniel, and Iov, Hema b'tzidkatam yenatzlu nafsham ne'um Hashem Elokim. They, because of their righteousness, would be saved. However, the implication is only they would be saved. That they were righteous enough to warrant Hashem intervening on their behalf, but they weren't going to look out for others. They weren't going to make sure that everybody else would be saved with them as well. And that's, in fact, what we see classically with Noah. He saved himself. He saved his family, but he didn't save anyone else. End of sidebar. Going back to Yosef. What else can define a tzaddik? We're going to go now to source 5, to the Midrash Tanchuma, but this time in Parshat Behalotcha, under the discussion of who were the Leviim, because Moshe is instructed to take the Leviim to sanctify them for Avodat HaMishkan. And in this Midrash, we see the following people who are going to be discussed and looked at as tzaddikim, and I'm reading from the beginning of Source 5. Davar acher, kachet ha-Leviim. Zeshem ha-Rakatuv Hashem tzaddik givchan. Hashem will test those who are tzaddikim. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'aleh et ha'adam nishara ad shebochen ubotek oto tzila. Hashem is not going to elevate somebody, give them a position of authority, until he tests them first. V'kivan shehu omed b'nisyono, and when it is determined that he can withstand the nisayon, the test, hu ma'aleh oto nishara, he is then going to be elevated. V'chena tamotze b'avinu Abraham nisa oto HaKadosh Baruch Hu eser nisyonot, v'amad b'nisyono v'chan karken kach berho. And that's what happened with Abraham. Hashem tested him 10 times. Abraham passed with flying colors, and then Hashem blessed him. Shenemar v'Hashem berachet Abraham bakol. At the beginning of Parshat Chayesara, it says that Hashem blessed Abraham with everything. V'chein Yitzchak nisahu b'mei Avimelech v'amad b'nisyono v'char kach berchu. Shenemar v'Yisra Yitzchak be'eretzahu. And then Yitzchak was tested with Avimelech. He withstood, and he was blessed. I'm not sure why it's not considered a test for him for Akedat Yitzchak, but again, a different discussion. V'chen Yaakov, b'chol otan atzarot, b'Esav, uv'Dina, uv'Yosef. Yaakov was tested with Esav, his brother, Dina, his daughter, Yosef, his son. V'ech yetza mibeit avi v'imo, ki b'makli avarti v'gomer, and how he had to run away from his parents' house taking only with him the makel, the staff. Uber ho, and as he withstood all of these tests, Hashem blesses him. Shenemar beira Elohim el Yaakov. Hashem appears to Yaakov. Od bevoomi padana Aram bevarechotel. That as Yaakov is returning back from Aram, as he's returning back to get to Beit El. This is after the Shechem and Dina event has taken place. After all of these things, Yaakov is going to be blessed. Vechein Yosef. Nisahu be'eshet Potifar. Yosef was tested with Eshet Potifar. Vayachavush yud ben shana, and was imprisoned for 12 years. Vaharkan yatsa v'nasem melech, and then he was let go and made into a king, or second to the king. Al she'amad b'nisyono havei Hashem tzadik yivchan. Then he's considered a tzadik. He stood and passed the test. As it says, Hashem is going to test the tzaddik, and then with Shevet Levi, the fact that they maintain their identity in Mitzrayim, that's going to get for them the designation of tzaddikim, and why they're going to be made special in this section as well. Okay, so we have two different opinions right now of what it means to be a tzaddik. On the one hand, zan, mefarnes, you provide food for people. The other hand, and with that, masim tovim, and the other hand, that you're able to withstand a test. By withstanding a test, you're going to be considered a tzaddik. Here's where I want to do some of the audience participation. How many of you, when you wrote down or you thought about a tzaddik, thought about position number one, the idea of sustaining people? Did that come to your mind at all? Okay, excellent. How many of you thought about the second one, the idea of passing a test, and that's why they became a tzaddik? How many of you thought specifically about Eshet Potifar, and that's the reason he's called tzaddik? And okay, I see a lot of people who haven't raised their hands yet. What have you put down for tzaddik? What makes a person a tzaddik? Anyone want to volunteer? Yeah? A selfless, okay. Anything else? Always trying to do the right thing. Anything? Yeah? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. A good example for others. Yes? And? Okay, doing what Hashem wants us to do, even if Hashem doesn't agree. If he doesn't agree, he understands he has a mission that he needs to accomplish, and he will go ahead and do it, even if it's not what he thought was going to be the best idea. Okay, those are actually the ideas we're going to... You want to add one more point? Okay, hitalech lefanai, walk in front of me and do what I'm supposed to be doing. So we're going to see elements of all of those as we continue on. Once we have the designation of Yosef, and even though the Midrashim are giving us a somewhat limited one, I wanted to start looking at his life, going backwards, if you would, a retrospective. Again, we're reading about Mitat Yosef in this week's Parsha. Let's look back to the beginning and see what it means to have been a tzaddik. What did he have to do in his life, and how did he overcome it? Okay, so we're going to start now. I've given some psukim that are not on the source sheets. When we look at Yosef, when we first meet Yosef, we're told the following, Perek Lamedzayin Pasuk Bet, if any of you want to just grab a chumash, and if not, I'll just read slowly. Ela toldot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana, haya ro'eh techav batzon, v'hu na'ar et b'nei Bilha, ve'et b'nei Zilpa, neshe aviv, v'yave Yosef et divatam ra'ah el avihem. Yosef is 17 years old. He's going to be the toldot Yaakov, and we continue with the stories of Yaakov. It's through Yosef. He would shepherd his brothers with the sheep, either, and we'll leave that more to the side. What I want to look at is v'hu na'ar, and he is a na'ar. What does it mean that he is a na'ar? We could also look into specifically b'nei bilha, but for right now, let's look at the term na'ar that's going to be used. Let's please remember that he's 17. 17-year-olds, even today, are idealistic. They're optimistic. Yosef knows already that he's someone special. How does he know? Number one, in the next pasuk, pasuk gimel, his father gives him a ketonet pasim, a special tunic that's designating royalty, designating you have great things ahead of you. His father makes him a ben zkunim, appoints him as the number one son to look after him, according to the opinion of the Ramban. And then there are going to be the dreams that he has, the two series of dreams, one showing something to do with economics and food and sustenance, the sheaves of wheat, and one implying some sort of rulership position with the sun, the moon, and the stars. And as many 17-year-olds, he's excited and wants to share his newfound vision and wants to share his mission and wants to get started and wants to really embrace the world with what is going to come and how he's going to step up to the plate. It's a tough job, but he's ready to do it. Come and get excited with me, as only a 17-year-old can do. Not everybody around him is as excited by his visions, and specifically by the way this little pipsqueak is coming up to them and telling him about all that he's going to do for them in the future. And if you look in source, it should be 11, the Sforno. The Sforno is going to pick up on this word, na'ar, and I'm beginning with the dibur ha-matchil v'hu na'ar. U'mipnei na'aruto chata l'havi dibat echav ki lo nisa v'lo hitponen l'acharit davar. And because of his young age, he sinned. He didn't realize how he should be giving the advice, what he should be telling Yaakov, how to inform Yaakov if the brothers were doing something wrong without making it seem as bad as it was, or getting the brothers in trouble in such a negative way, or just running and getting so excited about it. He was not as mature. He didn't see where his actions and specifically his words might lead him. Even though he was very smart, he was clearly in charge of the sheeping industry for his family. He understood a lot about business. And he would tell the elders of his generation what to do. He still wasn't wise in the ways of diplomacy. He wasn't the wise in what we would call today the interpersonal relationships, knowing how to get along with different people. And his brothers resent him. And as other Mefarshim are going to point out, it's not so much what he said, it's how he said it. And they are taking offense. I saw a question. Just a little louder, please. Yes, definitely. So she's saying. Okay, so you're playing on the words ro'eh, ro'ah, ro'eh with an I, ro'ah. And the idea that as a na'ar, Yosef wasn't able to see what was going to come from all of his actions, which is what happens when you're young and just starting out, and a flaw, and something for which he's going to pay dearly. But as we're going to see, something in which he is going to then, woo, shoot forward in an amazing, amazing way. So the brothers resent him, and the brothers are going off sheeping. I like that word. And Yaakov is going to send Yosef to go see Shlom Echav, to go see what's going on. An interesting interpretation I just read recently, why is it so dachuf, why is it so necessary for Yaakov to send Yosef? Possibly Leah had died at this time and he needs to tell the other brothers what had happened. Just an interesting perspective on what is going on. I'd have to go back and check. I didn't think I was going to mention it today, so didn't check the source, but I can go back and find out where it says that. Yaakov is going to send Yosef. Yosef somewhat realizes that his brothers don't like him. It's a really far walk to Shechem. As we're going to see, it's not enough that he's going to go to Shechem. He's going to have to go beyond to Dothan. To Yosef's credit, he answers, Hineni, this rizut, the energy, the enthusiasm, the idealism, he's willing to go. He wears the ketonet pasim as he's going. And as his brothers look up, having traveled to Dothan, and the pasuk says that they, vayit naklu, they were already plotting that possibly the dogs that they took were ones that were designed to attack. They knew they were going to Dothan. Their mind was not necessarily in this light and easy brotherly love moment. And they see Yosef coming from afar, and they see the ketonet pasim, and they lose it. Oh my goodness, what is he coming to tell us? They are scared that they are going to be sent away in the same way that Esav was sent away, in the same way that Ishmael was sent away. They thought that Yaakov is selecting Yosef, and all the other brothers will be sent away. They feared for themselves. They are angry at Yosef, and they throw him into a pit. What is now beginning is a series of ups and downs that we're going to see happening to Yosef. And as you noted, part of a tzaddik is going to be, how do you deal with these changes in your fortune? How do you keep going? And Yosef does this l'mofet. It is really quite amazing how he's constantly able to go up, go down, and then pick himself up, dust himself off, and start all over again. So if we start at the top, he's got the ketonet pasim, and he's got the dreams. He goes to Dotan. The brothers throw him into a pit. They sell him as a slave. He is crying his heart out. He's begging, he's pleading with them, brothers, don't do this to me. What have I done to you that you're just going to throw me away like this? If you look in source 12, Reshit Mem Bet, we see not from the original scene in Perek Lamed Zayin when he's first sold, but later when the brothers first stand in front of Yosef, they don't know that it's Yosef. Yosef is able to hear things and understand for the first time. And they see the brothers talking. Vayamru ish achiv, aval ashemim anachnu alachinu, asher ra'inu tzarat nafsho bitchananu elenu velo shamanu. We are guilty of what we did to our brother. We saw his tzarot. We saw the pain of his soul. He was begging us, and we didn't listen. Al kein ba elenu hatzara hazot. And that's why all of this terrible thing has happened to us, that we're now forced to bring down Binyamin. And Reuven is trying to say, but I told you then to listen, and of course they didn't listen to him. So Yosef is in the pit, and if you think that things can't get worse, they do. He's sold as a slave, and he's sold as a slave in Egypt, far away. And he's sold as a slave to Potiphar. And the Pasuk tells us, I didn't give you the Pasuk, but we are going to be looking at Rashi for source 14. I'll read the Pasuk first, which you don't have. The Yosef who rad Mitzrayma, v'knehu Potiphar saris paro sar tabachim. Potiphar buys him, almost with the implication that Potiphar is buying him for himself. Yosef is, after all, good-looking. Unless we read too much into it, that's exactly what Rashi, following the Midrashim, does, saying what? Potiphar had aspersions, sexual aspersions, on Yosef. And Yosef would have been in tremendous trouble were it not for divine intervention. How did Hashem help him? By doing something to Potiphar, making him a saris, making him a eunuch. It sounds like some sort of chemical intervention from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that Potiphar no longer desired Yosef, and that's referenced to in the Rashi, Mem Aleph, Mem He, when we meet Potiphera, whose daughter Osnat will become Yosef's wife. Potiphera, says Rashi, who Potiphar? Okay, he's Potiphar, why does he have a new name? V'nikra Potiphera al shenistares me'elav, because he became a eunuch, his name got changed, l'fi shechamad et Yosef l'mishkav zachar, because he desired Yosef in a physical way. So he was in a pit. He was sold as a slave. He's barely escaping Potiphar's intentions, and yet he pulls himself up. And everywhere we look, Yosef is being matzliach. Things get better for him. Source number 17. Vayhi Hashem et Yosef, vayhi matzliach, vayhi beveit Adonav Hamitzri. He is successful. Vayar Adonav ki Hashem ito v'chol asher hu oseh Hashem matzliach b'adon. Potiphar realizes that Yosef is successful. For the employer to realize that the slave is the cause of all of the good things happening to you, that's miraculous. Vaimsa Yosef chen be'inav vayesharetu to vayefkidehu al veito v'chol yeshlo natam b'adon. He puts Yosef in charge of everything, except the lechem, whatever it is, Yosef is in charge of it all. Great. And we even see a sign of maturity where Yosef is recognizing, I didn't quite do this on my own. It's because Hashem is with me that I have been so successful. Yosef isn't quite done with his journey yet. And at the end of Pasuk Vav, we're told, Vayhi Yosef yafe toar v'yafe mar'eh. We're reminded again of his good-lookingness. Rashi, on that pasuk, I didn't give you, I'm just going to read.
ויהי יוסף יפה תואר כיוון שראה עצמו מושל, התחיל אוכל ושוטה ומסלסל בשערו. He's got a good job, he's in charge of the household, he's wearing nicer clothing, he's not looking as scrawny as he did when he first was sold as a slave, he's getting some sunshine, he's nice and tanned, he's no longer this pale person wearing the cloak all the day, and he begins to fix his hair. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Avicha Mit'abel, says Hashem, your father is mourning, v'tamisel sel b'sarecha, and you're doing your hair? Ani magrebecha tadov, I'm going to set a bear loose on you. Miad v'tisa eshet Adonav et inav el Yosef, and right away eshet Potiphar turns her eyes towards Yosef. So Hashem helped him with Potiphar, but now he has to deal with eshet Potiphar. And you have to imagine what it's like for an Eved, Ivri, a young, good-looking lad, to walk this fine line between being in charge of everything in Potiphar's house and ignoring the advances of his master's wife while not insulting her. And I want you to look carefully at Pasuk 15, the source 15, Breshit Lametet, Vayhi kidabra el Yosef yom yom. It wasn't just a one-time event that she tried to seduce him. Daily, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, he had to walk this fine line. Velo shama eleha, and he didn't listen to her. Lishkav etzla lihiotima, and she would change what she's asking for. Whether it was lying down on the bed, we'll have our clothing on, nothing will happen. Whether it's even more than that, whether it's simply being in the room, all of those are possible based on what she's saying, and day after day, he has to resist her. At some point, we're not sure, it's possible maybe he begins to crack a little bit. And that's certainly going to be suggested in Source 16 when Rashi talks about the day that he comes back and there's no one else around at the house at that time. Why is there no one else around at the house at that time? Because it was the special day. We learn later that it was Yom Huledet at Paro. Everybody has gone down to celebrate with Paro at the banks of the Nile River. But Eshet Potiphar is going to take this opportunity, knowing that no one else is going to be left in the house. Maybe this is going to be a good time for her to accomplish her mission. And she comes home. And Yosef has also come home, la'asot melachto, to do his work. And the Rashi, beginning with Antibor HaMatril, gives us two opinions, that of Rav and that of Shmuel. Chad amar melachto mamash, one says he really came back to check into things to do his work. V'chad amar la'asot tzrachav ima, but the other one is saying, wait, it doesn't make sense. Yosef is in charge of this household. He's going to come back to check menial jobs on the day that everybody is celebrating? Something's not right. What does he really come back for? And says that he was about to succumb. Ella, at the last minute, shenir et lo demut diokno shel aviv. He saw the image of his father, kedita b'mesechet sota. He had a vision of his father saying, in the future, the Kohen Gadol is going to wear a breastplate with stones representing all of the Shvatim. Do you want your Shevet to be represented there or not? He saw an image of his father, and that reminded him, I might be in Egypt now. I might be living among Mitzrim. Yes, it's been hard to overcome, but I'm Ben Yaakov. And I'm not going to give in. This moment for him, which had to have been a turnaround on one way, is also going to turn and flip his fate, because once again he's going to find himself in jail. Back where he began, if you would. And in jail, again, he begins to pull himself together to become successful. He recognizes that Hashem is helping him, and the person in charge of the jail recognizes that Yosef is someone special and appoints Yosef to be like the overseer of what's going on. At this moment, we see another change around. Until now, it's really been about Yosef, his dream, his vision, his mission. At this point, we actually see him thinking about someone else. Now, you can tell me that was his job. He was in jail. He was appointed over everybody. But he's still an Ivri, and nobody's going to let him forget that. And in his lowly position as an Ivri, he wakes up one morning and sees two head Sarim of Paro. Yes, they're in prison right now, but boy, are they important. And their faces don't look so good. Source number 18. Bereshit mem pasuk vav vayavoy aleim Yosef baboker vayar otam b'himizoafim. And he sees something painful. They're troubled. They're upset. Vayishal tzivisei Paro. Young Yosef, the Ivri, the Eved, goes up to these Shnei Sarim and asks, what's going on? Asher toba mishvar beit Adonav lemor madu afenechem ra'im hayom. Why is your face so bad? You don't look like you slept. You look like you're in panic. What can I do to help? And that's the beginning of his learning to think about others as well. They tell him their dream. He provides an interpretation. And that will be proved to be correct. And in 2 years' time, he's going to be out of jail again, standing in front of Paro, who also has dreams and doesn't know what to do about them. It's at this point the Sar Hamashkim remembers, oh yes, there was this good dream interpreter in jail. They bring out Yosef, who again has learned to credit Hashem. When Paro says, I hear that you know how to solve dreams, Biladai Elokim Ya'aned Shlom Paro. It's really not up to me, says Yosef, it's up to Hashem, but let me see if I can help you. Paro gives him the two dreams, whose interpretations have eluded all of Egypt. He's gone to other people, Paro has. He certainly has his advisors. This is source number 19 in Bereshit Rabbah. Did nobody try to solve him? Rabbi Yeshua Disichnin B'Shem Rabbi Levi, Potrin Hayu Oto. There were a lot of people who gave suggestions. Ela Shelo Haya Kola Nichnas Be'oznav, but Paro didn't like the way they sounded. What were some of these suggestions? Sheva haparot hatovot, sheva banot hatamolit. Seven good cows, you're going to have seven daughters. Sheva parot raot, sheva banot hatakover. Seven bad cows, you're going to bury those daughters. Vechen amru sheva hashibolim hatovot, the seven stalks of grain. Sheva malchiot hatakovesh, you're going to conquer seven kingdoms. V'sheva hashibolim haro'ot sheva parchiot mordot. The seven bad stalks of grain, they're going to rebel against you. It didn't make sense to Paro either, as we see in source 22, the Rabbeinu Bachaye quotes a midrash. Paro ra'a halom u'pitrono imo zachar ha'halom v'shachach pitro. That Paro had dreamt the dream and the solution, but when he woke up, he remembered the dream, forgot the solution. But it was in his subconscious somewhere that when he was hearing ideas, no, that's not it, let's try again. No, that's not it either. Or we can look at 20 and 21, Eliezer Ashkenazi from the 1500s, Shadow from the 1800s, who are going to say something similar, that Paro realized, similar to what Yosef did, what we mentioned before her, Paro realized that if he's getting the dream, there's a reason why he, Melech Mitzrayim, is getting the dream. It has to be a solution that would enable him in his job to look out for the people. He's the king. He has a responsibility. This dream has to tell him something. So until Yosef came along, none of the solutions met that criteria. Until Yosef was saying there's going to be 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, and if you don't look out, if you don't plan appropriately, your kingdom is going to be hit. You're going to look like those seven shriveled up stalks of grain, and you won't survive. At that point, Paro realized that, yes, this is what's going on, and appoints him. Yosef goes up again as second in command. At this point, Yosef has power. And as part of the power, you have to make very difficult decisions. Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardozo, in writing about Yosef, says the following. Yosef's life is the epitome of the complications of human existence in the extreme. It is life in which human conditions are far from ideal. There are no black and white choices in which it is easy to take a stand and where the good guys and the bad ones are clearly identified. Every choice includes a complex mixture of good and bad. What are some of the choices that Yosef has to make at this point?
On the one hand, he's going to have to make national choices in his role of second in command. On the personal level, he's going to have to make choices with his own family. Let's start with the family first. The first choice, now that he has some power, is why doesn't he contact his father, Yaakov? Why doesn't, when his brothers just happen to appear in front of him, why doesn't he explain to them who he is? How does he, this is not just when he's second in command, but how does he deal with his feelings of being abandoned at all time? When his brothers come and he sees them, he cries. He sends them away. They have to leave Binyamin behind. He forces them to come back with Binyamin. Yosef cries again. He forces them to leave with Binyamin, but has planted a trick with a gavia, with a goblet inside the sacks that are going to bring Yosef and Binyamin back. He sees for the first time that the brothers have advanced as well. Yehuda is willing to sacrifice his life, his freedom for Binyamin, and Yosef cries again. It is at that point that he identifies himself and tells the brothers, don't feel bad. I'm going to send you back now to get Yaakov and bring him back. Don't argue on the way back home. You did me bad, but it was all part of a larger plan in which Hashem was trying to get me here at this time in order to help you. His attitude, his forgiveness, his words at this time are unbelievable. How many of us would have that strength of character after what we had gone through to look at them and say, it's okay, it was part of a divine purpose. Yaakov comes down and Yosef cries. They are reunited at last. But what I think is actually the saddest is that he's never able to enjoy his family living in Egypt quite the same ways. Two items that come to mind. Number one, and again, I didn't give you these psukim, but I'll just mention it. In Perek Memchet, when Yaakov is inviting Ephraim and Menashe to come, we're told that by Yugad Yosef, that the messengers came to Yosef to tell him your father wants him. And we have to ask, after such a separation, why wasn't Yosef 24/7 spending all of this time with his father? Isn't that what most of us would do? In source number 6, the Pesikta Rabbati tells us as follows. Vayomer li Yosef, hinei avicha choleh. Mi amar lo sheaviv choleh? Who told him that his father was sick? Yesh omrim beruach hakodesh, maybe divine inspiration, ra'ah. Yesh omrim bilha amra lo shehaita meshameshet et Yaakov, kivan shechala ba'av amra li Yosef. Maybe it was Bilha who was taking care of Yosef, of Yaakov. V'yeshomrim Binyamin hodiyo, some say it was Binyamin, v'yeshomrim krusei hoshiv Yosef bepalterin, kivan shirgishu b'Yaakov shechole, ba'u v'hodiyo li'Yosef, that Yosef put people there to let him know what was going on. But all of these are implying the same thing, that for some reason Yosef was not hanging around Yaakov as much as we might have expected. Why? Continues the Psikta Rabbati. Hare kol shivcho shel Yosef, this is to Yosef's praise, shehaya maflik al kvod aviv v'lo nichnas etzlo b'chol sha'ah. He made sure not to go there all the time, and when he went, it was always within a group. She'ilulei shebao acherim v'amru lo aviv chole lo haya yodea, because otherwise, if people hadn't told him about his father, he wouldn't have known. He didn't want to be alone with Yaakov. He was scared that Yaakov might finally ask him what really happened that day in the field. And if his father asked him, he would be forced to answer. And once he answered, umekalalim, that Yaakov would then curse the brothers. Ani yodet tzidko shel Abba. I know, Yosef says, the weight of the words of my father. Kol devarav gzerotav hen, whatever he sees become decrees. Hen amar lelavan, im asher tzat elohecha lo yichye. He said to Lavan, whoever has your gods, your elilim, won't live. Umeita imi, and my mother died. Vani ba lomar sheikalalem, ikalalem, if I tell him what actually happened, if I give him the opportunity, he's going to curse them.
and the world will be destroyed. Shaloni Brahaulam Elabishvil Hashvatim, because the whole world was created for the Shvatim and ultimately Bnei Israel. Nefichach Lohayaholech Etzel Aviv Bechol Sha'ah. And for that reason, he wouldn't go and hang out with his father. You might have thought that his brothers would appreciate this and notice his absence and understand what Yosef was trying to accomplish. We might have thought that his brothers would welcome how Yosef was taking care of them and said, "Don't worry, I understand why this happened, it's fine." But the next time we see Yosef crying is not the last time, it's not when Yaakov dies, but it's on the way back home. When the brothers create a conversation that they had with Yaakov, this is in Perknun, again not on your source sheets, I apologize, and they say in the name of Yaakov that Yaakov promised on your behalf that you were going to take care of us. They have to lie and to fabricate a conversation telling Yosef, Yaakov made us a promise that we would be safe, because they were so scared of what Yosef might do. All of these years that he's reassuring them, all of these years that he's taking care of them, they're still not able to accept it. Yosef is. Yosef put the past behind him. They cannot. And Yosef cries. This is what's happened to our family. Yosef paid a high price for all that he did. But what about on the national level? In that area, we also see that things aren't as good. It's not easy to be the second in command in the days of a famine where everybody is counting on you for food and looking over your shoulder. Are you giving them the same amount? Are you giving them more? There are two different opinions about how much he gave his family. Some are going to say that he gave them what they needed, lefiatav, and some are going to say he gave them with an outstretched hand. But either way, he's going to be second-guessed, especially as a famine continues and things get worse. In the beginning, the Mitzrayim had some food and they had some money. But then the food is gone and they spend the money trying to buy more food. So they go to Yosef with their animals and he buys the animals and they get more money to buy grain. But then they run out of animals and they go to him and say, "All we have left are ourselves and our land." And he buys them as well. Now, in ancient times, the deal he worked out with them is really quite amazing. He's going to buy the land, but he's going to allow them to plant and to keep a certain amount. They're going to have to give 20% over to Paro, but they get to keep the rest. Does that make them happy? Not really. Rav Yoel ben Nun, a noticed mefaresh of Yeshivat Har Etzion, has a little post. I don't know if any of you have heard about 929, the Tanakh B'Yachad that has been going on from the Misrad HaChinuch in Israel. They started about 2 years ago. They're looking to finish on Yom HaAtzma'ut, going through all 929 prakim of Tanakh, one a day. So it's an amazing compendium of people from all different walks of life giving interpretation. Rav Yoel ben Nun has given one just about daily. And on this Perek Mem Zayin, where it talks about Yosef buying the land, he has the following post: Lu Hayiti Yoetz Shel Yosef. If I were the advisor of Yosef, what would I have told Yosef to do? I would have told him not to buy the lands, not to make the people feel that they are slaves, even though Yosef is doing it for the best reasons, even though Yosef is trying to move ahead and make sure that the famine is going to not have so many catastrophes that people are going to be able to survive, even though he's trying to ensure that Bnei Israel, his brothers, his family, have an economic foundation that is going to last them, because he knows that the Gzeirah of Brit Ben Abtarim, he knows that the slavery is going to happen soon. Even though he meant well, and at that time it might have been the best decision, there's going to be a resentment. So instead of helping them withstand the slavery, if anything, it's an impetus that drives Paro and the Mitzrayim to look for ways to enslave Bnei Israel later on. And even as Yosef dies, we see that there's a sense of sadness. He had been estranged, quote unquote. He hadn't been able to be close to Yaakov right before Yaakov dies.
He has to ask Paro's permission to go back to Eretz Canaan to bury his father. He can't even ask Paro directly. He has to send messengers. Again, if he's sending messengers, he's persona non grata in the palace. He sends messengers, gets the notice, you can go bury your father, but you got to leave things behind and you've got to come. He's really not a free man. For the person who had to make all of these hard decisions, he's left with a family who doesn't appreciate him, who are still suspicious of him, and with a position in the royal economy which has been demoted to very little. I'm continuing to read from what I started earlier, Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardozo. Tzaddikim are people who hold to a higher purpose. They cannot allow themselves to sway with the winds. To them applies the saying that if you do not stand for anything, you fall for everything. But to stand for something may quite well give you a bad name, however noble your intentions. One can only hope that perhaps one day people will discover what one was really about and how painful it was to be a hidden tzaddik. Usually, there is little chance that such will come about. After all, who has the privilege, like Yosef, to have his or her real story written in an eternal book? To go back to the first source we looked at, the one from the Zohar, Yosef as an Amud HaOlam, he stood for something, pun intended. The shoes that he had to wear, and again, metaphor chosen deliberately, the shoes that he had to wear were really difficult ones. He believed in the dreams, he believed in his mission, and he worked to fulfill that mission, both for his nuclear family and for the greater good of Am Yisrael, and even for the world in which he lived in, he wanted to make them all a better place. He stood in his shoes and he made the decisions he needed to. I wonder if we would have had the courage to do the same. What is this foundation that Yosef provides us with, the foundation that we can say the world rests? The ability to forgive others, even when they have done something very bad to us, realizing that there's sometimes another side to the story and a larger picture. The ability to think of others and what their needs are before ourselves. The ability to maintain one's identity and integrity in a community where it's not conducive to your values. He is indeed an Amud HaOlam. He is indeed a Tzaddik, Yehi Zichro Baruch.